Hi, thanks for joining. Please make sure you subscribe to follow us on all the various platforms here on the podcast, as well as on YouTube. The stuff we write on Substack, as well as quick takes on Instagram and on Threads. If you're enjoying what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing with all your friends and family. And if you have questions or comments about the stuff we're putting out there, please make sure you leave them in comments to us. We'd be more than happy to cover them in future talks. Over the last few days, there's been a lot in the news related to a advisory that came out from the U.S. Surgeon General as relates to the linkage of alcohol with cancer risks, where a lot of the news media is indicating that there are new studies that are indicating a linkage between alcohol and cancer risk, or the fact that we are now stipulating that alcohol causes cancers. There are a whole bunch of information, misinformation that is being presented very quickly, very similar to what we saw with a lot of the other findings that have come out as relates to health and disease and a lot of the new findings that we see within the medical literature. So what did the actual advisory state and how do we come about that conclusion? And what should we take away from the Surgeon General's warning about alcohol and cancer? Well, let's talk about that.
Warning. The following presentation contains information that might contradict what you have previously heard or believed to be true about how the human body works and contains material that is not suitable for closed-minded individuals. Enjoy.
Start with, let's go ahead and let's actually take a look at what did the Surgeon General actually state with the advisory that was published just a few days ago on the 3rd of January, 2025. The Surgeon General's advisory is basically stipulating that there is a direct link between alcohol consumption and increased cancer risk. That doesn't mean that the alcohol itself is causing the cancer. It simply means that we have an increased risk for cancer for people who consume alcohol. It further goes to stipulate that alcohol consumption is the third leading preventable cause of cancer within the United States after tobacco and after what the Surgeon General calls obesity, but as we've talked about previously, is actually over fatness issues, where we have an increased risk for various types of cancers coming about due to the impact that alcohol has on metabolic functions. The Surgeon General continues to stipulate that alcohol is a well-established preventable cause of cancer, responsible for about 100,000 cases of cancer and 20,000 cases of deaths annually within the United States, greater than the 13,500 alcohol-associated traffic crash fatalities per year in the United States, yet the majority of Americans are unaware of the risk. This advisory lays out steps that we can take to increase awareness of alcohol's cancer risk and minimize the harm. And this is where we start seeing a lot of the misinformation and disinformation that's out there. It does not stipulate that alcohol needs to be controlled in the same fashion, in the same way that we control tobacco. It is not indicating that we need to go about having some sort of additional restrictions on alcohol consumption. There is, within the idea about the advisory that's coming into play here, is that we need to have a attention to the public health issues that alcohol can have within our everyday normal physiological functions and how that might go about impacting our overall health. The call that's being put out here with the Surgeon General's warning is that alcohol-containing beverages should include a label indicating the cancer risk that can come from excessive consumption of alcohol. It calls for the reassessment of limits for alcohol consumption as relates to the cancer risk. It calls into the need to advise individuals to become aware of how alcohol consumption and increased alcohol consumption can lead to an increased relative risk for developing cancers, whether they are low risk or not. Where we have to start looking at in terms of public health professionals and community health professionals, highlighting how alcohol consumption can have a modifiable effect in terms of cancer risks, as well as the need to educate the public, to educate the general population so that we have an increased awareness to health risks that alcohol has beyond just the idea about alcohol consumption and traffic issues. And this is where we have to take a step back and take a look at, okay, what type of cancers are linked with alcohol consumption? And this is where we start looking at studies being published by the NIH, studies being published by the CDC, or epidemiology tracking done by the CDC in terms of what types of cancers might come about because of excessive alcohol consumption. And then why might we see these increased relative risks or cancers? If we start looking at the epidemiology studies, what we start seeing is we start seeing that drinking alcohol elevates the general risk for specific types of cancers, not general cancers that we would think about. These include cancers of the mouth and throat. This includes cancers within the esophagus. This includes cancers within the colon and within the rectum. This also includes issues in terms of possible cancer within the liver. And for people who have a risk factor for breast cancer, an increased relative risk for developing breast cancer. While both the NIH and CDC indicate this specifically for women, we do understand that breast cancer happens in both men and women, as well as across the various genders that we might see in terms of the social terms that we have for genders. The idea that we have within this is that the studies that are showing that three or more alcoholic drinks per day increase the risk for these cancers. There's also an increased risk that we see with beyond that three drink per day, with increased relative risks for stomach cancers and the possibility for pancreatic cancers. Even if we do take into account the fact that there is some benefit that can come from consuming at lower levels of consumption, distinct types of alcoholic beverages, in particular, alcoholic beverages that have versatile within them, specific types of tannins within them that are indicated as having antioxidant properties. We typically associate those alcoholic beverages or those alcoholic properties with things like red wine, as opposed to what we see in terms of alcohol consumptions coming away from beer or from hard alcohol or liquor. One of the indications here is that drinking less frequently or drinking less within each consumption may be better for us in the long term as relates to this cancer risk. However, there is a whole host of other factors that come into play as relates to cancer risks that go beyond just the alcohol consumption. And so we start talking about this, we have to take a step back and figure, okay, what do we mean when we say alcohol? Because alcohol is a chemical class. What we're actually talking about is we're talking about ethanol or ethyl alcohol. Those are the types of alcohols that we're talking about. We're talking about alcohol because those are the substances that we're going to be consuming in the beverages such as beer, cider, malt liquors, wines, or the distilled hard alcohols, liquors. Alcohol is coming about due to the fermentation process by yeast breaking down sugars in an anaerobic state. We also will see alcohols within a lot of medicines, within a lot of mouthwashes, within a lot of household products that are used in terms of extraction. These are substances that are used to extract distinct chemicals from products. Things that we'll see alcohols in, like vanilla extracts and within distinct types of flavorings. The consumption of these alcohols is based off of the idea that 14 grams or 0.6 ounces of pure alcohol is the indication for a standard alcoholic drink. This equates to a single serving of beer being about 12 ounces, a single serving of wine being about 5 ounces, or about 1.5 ounces or a quote-unquote shot for 80 proof distilled spirits or the liquor. The amounts that are used within discussing alcohol consumption can help us provide a way for us to compare the amount of alcohol that we consume with what would be a standard serving of alcohol, where we have to be aware of how many drinks we are consuming, not just within a single session, but across the days of the week, with the understanding of how much total consumption takes place. Where if we start looking at the guidelines that we have produced for us in terms of advisories and dietary guidelines, the moderation of consumption of alcohol to about 2 drinks or less for men about one drink or less for women per day is based off of this kind of understanding of what alcohol can do in terms of not just cancer risk, but also metabolic risk. What ends up happening when alcohol is consumed? A lot of what we look at in terms of the metabolic effects of alcohol in terms of its impact on cancerous, the impact on health issues, is not necessarily alcohol itself. Alcohol is a toxin. And as a toxin, it's going to get metabolized in the liver. And when it gets metabolized in the liver, it gets converted into a secondary chemical. And the secondary chemical is just as toxic as alcohol is. And that is what's a chemical known as acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is a chemical that is a known carcinogenic chemical. It is known as a known mutagenic chemical. That is, it's a chemical that has the ability to damage DNA, that is, can cause mutations to take place within DNA. It is also known to cause problems in terms of damaging proteins. It's a desiccant. It's going to change the functional structure of the protein by removing waters from around the protein. It is one of the chemicals that is used when we look at preserving specimens in biology labs. It's one of the properties that is used for preserving specimens in medical fields. We know that consuming alcohol is when we have metabolic effects taking place, not just within the liver in terms of its metabolic processing of the alcohol into the acetaldehyde, but alcohol itself can act as an ROS, a reactive oxidative species. And we do know that reactive oxidative species has carcinogenic and mutagenic properties, has the ability to act as an oxidant within various metabolic functions that can impact protein functions, that can impact enzyme functions, that can impact the structure of the DNA, that can act as an oxidant on the DNA, causing DNA damage to take place. We also know that alcohol has a small impact on the ability for the intestines to absorb various types of nutrients and the ability for the intestines to break down certain types of nutrients. These include things like vitamin A. These include things like a lot of the vitamin Bs. These include things like vitamin C, vitamin D, the carotenoids that we know have antioxidant properties, that we know have metabolic properties in terms of normal cell cycling, such as the B vitamins like folates. We know that for certain people who have high risk for estrogen sensitive cancer growths, alcohol consumption has an impact on aromatase activity, estrogen that can cause an increased amount of estrogen to be produced. We know that alcohol has an impact on actual production of estrogen from the gonads, whether those are going to be the testes or the ovaries, where we will see estrogen being produced by both of the gonads. We also know that during the fermentation process and during the bottling and processing of alcoholic beverages for mass consumption, that is, within the production of alcohol for distribution, we get various types of chemical byproducts, which can include things like nitrous amines, that can include phenols, that can include various types of hydrocarbons that we know have impacts in terms of metabolic disruptions. And we know that metabolic disruptions can act as a carcinogenic based off of what type of metabolic disruption they are going to do. While we don't know all of the mechanisms that come into play as it relates to how cancer risks increase with alcohol consumption, we do know that there is a clear pattern of linkage between specific types of cancers that we've talked about previously or just listed previously in terms of cancers of the mouth and throat, cancers of the esophagus, cancers of the colon and the rectum, cancers in the liver that are linked with alcohol consumption. In terms of cancers of the mouth and throat, we know that there's about a 1.8-fold increase of oral cavity cancers. We have about and that can actually go ahead and lead into about a 1.4-fold increased risk for larynx cancers relative to people who do not drink at all. Heavy drinkers are indicated to have somewhere around a five-fold increase of risk for having oral cancers, cancers of the mouth and throat. And about 2.5 to 2.6-fold increase in terms of relative risk for cancers of the larynx. If we look at the cancer risk of the mouth, the larynx, and the throat, if we combine the use of tobacco with the use of alcohol, we have a substantially higher relative risk than just use of tobacco alone. That means there's a compounding impact. However, the total relative risk compound impact that we have between alcohol and tobacco is not reported. What about the esophagus? We know that alcohol consumption has been associated with squamous cell carcinomas developing within the esophagus. We know that based off of people who don't drink versus people who do drink, we have about a 1.3 higher fold for people who have the one drink for women to two drinks for men per day, whereas we have about a five-fold increase for anybody who is labeled as being a heavy drinker, that is someone that is going to be consuming in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 alcoholic beverages per day for men, 2 to 3 alcoholic beverages per day for women in terms of that heavy drinker. People who have an inherent deficiency in the enzymes that metabolize alcohol are known to have a substantial increased risk for esophageal squamous cell carcinoma relative to those who do not consume alcohol at all. And that has to deal with the impact that the alcohol has as an ROS on those cells and the ability for the alcohol to go ahead and actually move across the cell membrane of the esophageal cells and directly impact those cells prior to having any type of metabolism taking place in the liver or at other cells throughout the body. Now, one of the organs that we know has a direct impact on alcohol consumption, even though we usually don't look at it in terms of cancer, is with the liver. And this is where we have with people who are heavy drinkers, people who are moderate heavy drinkers for long periods of time, have an increased relative risk for developing cirrhosis. Same thing happens for people who happen to have overfatness issues, where we start developing non-alcoholic fatty acid liver syndrome, where people who develop alcoholic fatty acid liver syndrome have an increased risk for developing cirrhosis within the liver. That cirrhosis within the liver is also associated with an increased relative risk for liver cancer development, including hepatocellular carcinomas to develop, that is independent of any type of cirrhotic changes taking place within the liver. That means that even if we don't have cirrhosis taking place, we still have an increased relative risk for the cells of the liver, the hepatocells, the hepatic cells, developing cancers due to the impact that the conversion reactions taking place within the hepatocytes have on the hepatic cells themselves, as well as the increased ROS damage, increased oxidative stress on the liver will have on those cells themselves as relates to the development of cancerous growths. Once again, independent of development of cirrhosis, yet the development of cirrhosis will be combined with that increased relative risk for cancer development, meaning that the person who is a heavy drinker not only is going to have an increased relative risk for having cirrhosis of the liver, damage to the liver, but will also have an increased relative risk for having cancers in the liver. Part of this reactions that are taking place within the liver, part of the metabolism taking place within the liver as relates to the consumption of alcohol and the conversion of the alcohol into the acetaldehyde or into just the aldehydes, is that it's going to be utilizing a lot of the B vitamins that we have within our diet. It can actually overuse the B vitamins within the diet. And the problem is that a lot of the B vitamins are necessary for other metabolic processes, which includes the development of selective types of neurotransmitters, selective types of cell signals within the neurons or chemical signals within the neurons that are used for normal neurological functions that is associated with neurodegenerative diseases such as Wernicke's and Wernicke-Korsakoff syndromes that are known to take place with people who become B vitamin deficient due to overconsumption of alcohol. So it's not just the increased relative risk for cancers that can come from the heavy consumption of alcohol in terms of cancers of the liver. We will also see an overutilization of B vitamins that can lead to B vitamin deficiency issues that is associated with neurodegenerative diseases that we see with people who are chronic alcoholic consumers, particularly heavy consumers of alcohol, where we have to look at this in terms of a compounding effect that can take place due to the lack of B vitamin absorption, the overutilization of B vitamins by the liver in terms of the need to convert the alcohol into the aldehyde or into the acetaldehyde in order to have it be removed. But the other thing that takes place due to this conversion of the alcohol into the aldehyde is a change in normal neurological functions independent of the impact on B vitamins due to the denaturing effect that aldehydes have, due to the desiccating, due to the dehydrating effect that aldehydes have on neurological functions that can impact and do lead to a lot of the morning after syndromes that we tend to think about when we start thinking about hangover issues, where we usually will talk about hangovers as being a dehydration issue or hangovers as being a withdrawal effect from the alcohol. But in actuality, what it is the impact that these acetaldehydes, that these aldehydes have on the neurological functions within the brain that cause a lot of the headaches, a lot of the lethargy, a lot of the syndromes that we have from excessive alcohol consumptions after the day after we have had excessive alcohol consumptions, once again, independent of any of the carcinogenic effects that can take place. However, the more hangovers that are being experienced, you can think of this as kind of the build up to or the kind of compounding effects that alcohol has, very similar to what we talk about when we talk about skin cancer risks and the constant tanning or the burning that takes place, where it's not just a single episode that we have to worry about, but it's the compounding of episodes that will lead to the issues that we talk about as relates to the cancer risks for the liver and in terms of ROS damage that can take place or B vitamin deficiencies that can take place related to neurodegenerative diseases. Other cancers that we tend to have linkages, direct linkages with epidemiological research with cancers and alcohol consumptions include colorectal cancers, where we see for individuals who are moderate to heavy alcohol consumers, somewhere in the neighborhood of about a 1.2 to 1.5 fold increased relative risk for developing colon and rectal cancers relative to those individuals who do not consume alcohol. There is also indications for estrogen-sensitive tissue cancer development, particularly breast cancer development. Once again, the CDC and the NIH tend to lump this into a female-only or a woman-only issue. Yet we do know that men can develop breast cancers that very similar to women developing breast cancers. However, the studies have only looked at the females and their breast cancers, not necessarily male breast cancer or intersex breast cancer issues that can come about. Where we see within the epidemiology studies an increased risk for breast cancer relative to the amount of alcohol intake, where we have a slight increase, about a 1.04 fold, which means you have about a 4% higher relative risk for breast cancers for people who are excessively light drinkers relative to the non-drinkers. This relative risk increases to about 1.23 fold increase. That means there's about 23% higher increased relative risk for those individuals who are moderate drinkers. This relative risk increases to about 1.6 fold for those who are heavy drinkers. And once again, this is based off of the indication of what is a light drinker, what is a moderate drinker, what is a heavy drinker, based on the number of servings per day compounded or expanded over drinks per week. Within a couple of the studies that were looked at as it relates to this linkage between breast cancer or estrogen-sensitive tissue cancers and alcohol, there is an indication that those who have never smoked but are still having alcohol consumptions have about a 1.13 or 1.1 to 1.2 fold increase in the alcohol-related cancers, which means that even if you don't smoke, you still have an increased relative risk for cancers. Along with the breast cancer that is associated with estrogen-sensitive changes, we also see estrogen-sensitive changes and increased cancer risk in the ovary, as well as within the uterus. We also see steroid-associated responses in terms of increased relative risk for cancers in the prostate. However, there is very limited evidence to support that it is alcohol itself causing these relative increased risks. We do have some evidence of that the accumulation of alcohol consumption over time has been associated with stomach cancer as well as pancreatic cancers. But once again, there is no indication for what is the actual change in relative risks that we see. There has also been an associated change of relative risk for kidney cancers as well as for lymphoma cancers as relates to alcohol consumption. But in this case here, we actually have associated decreased risk for specific types of, for general types of kidney cancers. The problem is that the potential benefits that we might get from reducing these cancer risks tend not to outweigh the harms that we can get from the alcohol consumption as relates to other health issues. In this idea about the increased relative risk, we have to take a step back and think about how can we actually get this increased relative risk based off of alcohol consumption? That is, what is it about our physiology? What is it about our genes that is being impacted by alcohol? And this is where we have to look at, okay, how will the cells metabolize the alcohol? And this is where we have to look at the enzymes that come into play and how those enzymes are being impacted and what that impact on the enzymes might have as relates to the formation of secondary metabolites. And this is where we have to look at the enzymes alcohol dehydrogenase and specifically a couple of enzymes within the alcohol dehydrogenase family. That includes alcohol dehydrogenase general as well as alcohol dehydrogenase number 2. Alcohol dehydrogenase is going to convert the ethanol into the acetaldehyde. We have seen this come about in terms of acetaldehyde production occurring both within the mouth as well as within the microbiome that lives within the intestines as well as within the mouth. And this can act as a possible metabolic disruptor to those microbiome, to the bacterium, to the microorganisms that live within the mouth, live within our intestines, that can have an impact on our overall metabolism, that can have an impact as a metabolic disruptor. The acetaldehyde itself is a metabolic disruptor. There is some indication that there's a secondary enzyme coming into play within the alcohol dehydrogenase family, and that is the aldehyde dehydrogenase 2 enzyme. And the aldehyde dehydrogenase 2 enzyme is going to metabolize the acetaldehyde into other substances, into other aldehydes, or into other acetones that can go about being removed that do not have the same level of toxicity, the same level of metabolic disruption that we see from the metabolites coming away from the conversion of the alcohol into the aldehydes. And it's this conversion between the alcohols with its metabolites, with its aldehyde metabolites, with its other conjugate forms of metabolites coming away from the liver, coming away from intestinal cells, coming away from the microbiome that have an impact on our overall functions. Now, there is some indication that the compound versatile that we see within grapes that we get from consumption of red wine and possibly might see from other plant materials has a health beneficial aspect to it. The problem is that as relates to the preventative effect that it has on cancers, there does not seem to be any clear indication, any clear effect size indication that resveratrol by itself will have an impact on cancer prevention or reversal of reactive oxidative stress, oxidative stress on the body, as claimed by many of the providers of resveratrol or people who have done some of the research, particularly research has been supported by the supplement companies. So what can we say about all of the information that we have been bombarded with since the Surgeon General came out with the new advisory on the link between alcohol and cancer risk on the 3rd of January, 2025? Is there truth behind the advisory? Yes, there is truth behind the advisory. Yes, we have empirical evidence to indicate that there is a linkage that takes place in between the consumption of alcohol and the formation of specific types of cancers, which means that it might be beneficial in terms of a public health awareness side of healthcare to have these advisories being posted on alcoholic beverages, simply to allow for greater awareness to health issues beyond just the drunk driving issues that we tend to think about when it comes to alcohol consumption. Is it something that we should be overly concerned about? Depends upon what we look at in terms of relative risks for cancers and what we do to prevent cancers within our own lifestyle. Are these new findings? Is there something that is brand new in terms of the findings that we have? It's not that new. A lot of the research that we have coming out from the NIH, that coming from the CDC, traces back for a good decade to a decade and a half, almost 2 to 3 decades in some cases, that have shown this linkage between alcohol consumption and cancer formations due to the impact on metabolism within the body due to the conversion of alcohol to other types of metabolic toxins that have a metabolic disruptive effect, that have a mutagenic effect, that have a carcinogenic effect within the cells of the body, which means that we should be aware of how much alcohol we're consuming and how that consumption of alcohol might compound itself with other factors that increase the relative risk for developing cancers within the mouth and throat, within the esophagus, within the colon and rectum, within the liver, within estrogen-sensitive tissues, and within sex hormone-sensitive tissues. Understanding what our relative risk is and how the compounding effect of alcohol might have on those relative risks for developing cancers should be one of the things we would look at, one of the things we educate ourselves about as relates to how we can go about preventing cancers, how we can go about having a healthier lifestyle. Well, thanks for listening. Hope you got a bit out of the conversation here as we talked about what the Surgeon General actually said as relates to this relative risk for cancer development and the need to have an advisory on labels for products that sell alcohol or have alcohol within them. If you like what we're putting out there, please make sure you're giving us that big 5-star rating. Give us a big thumbs up, letting us know that we're doing good. Please make sure that you're following us here on the podcast as well as on YouTube, our written stuff in Substack, as well as the quick takes that we post to Instagram and to Threads. If you like what we're putting out there, please make sure you're sharing everything with your friends and family. Please make sure you leave us comments, post questions. We'll be more than happy to discuss anything that you might want us to discuss in future conversations. Please stay tuned for a further discussion on the topic as it relates to the impact alcohol has on our body, as well as the myths and misconceptions that we have as to how we can go about living a healthier lifestyle.